And we're back. Welcome to yet another episode of Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast.
We spread them out by a week so that it doesn't kill you. This is number 17.
Yes, there's only so much of our wit and wisdom that the internet can take. We don't want your computer to, like, smoke to start curling up the back.
I don't think you're worried about smoking the computer. Smoke coming out of your ears.
A desire to find a cliff.
Speaking of computers.
Wait, who are you?
Michael Gugis.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm Michael Gugis.
That means I must be a Sorbo.
That's what it says on my driver's license. That picture looks a lot like me.
My brother used to have sneakers that said all on the left toe and pro on the right toe.
Okay.
And we used to go for family bike rides at Magic Island, which is a beach park on Oahu.
Cool.
And they got all these paths that go around. It's perfect for riding your bicycle. No cars can get run over.
Awesome.
And my brother is young, and we're still teaching him left and right.
Right.
So when we want him to go left, we holler all, and we want him to go right, we holler pro. I thought of that because you got your name written on you. It says Michael on the left and Gugis on the right. When you walk backwards, then you become Gugis Michael, like you're in the military.
You know, Ed?
Badump. It's the name of a town in Germany.
What? Oh, Badump. And that's right, and the guy, shh.
And then, so there's a picture of somebody holding up a sign that says, shh, next to it. Pretty good.
I still like that. I mentioned this to you earlier. I love the professor at Citrus College. It's a professor and administrator who's got two road signs pointing in the opposite direction. One says college, and one direction is college. The other direction is weed. I love that.
What's the name of the guy who played Sulu in Star Trek?
George Takei.
He has a Facebook page.
Yes.
That's where I saw that picture of the Badumch town.
Sandy.
It's a good guy to friend because he's got a lot of great puns.
He's hysterical.
If you like puns.
Oh, he's really funny. I could go into a long story about the Dead Authors podcast and George Takei, but I won't. Anyway, why are we here? Why do any of us exist?
Well,
we are all made of star
too
stuff.
Many free oxygen molecules on the planet, and we need to consume them.
We're made of star stuff.
We are.
That's just disturbing, because that means at any moment, spontaneous nuclear human combustion could erupt in me. You know what? That would be
the uncertainty principle rules your life.
That would be a great band name. Spontaneous nuclear human combustion. I would go pay
That's
to see
too
them.
Long.
I would go. I don't care. I would go to.
It's a journey to say that name.
It is, and their first album, Velveeta Nightmare, which is also a great band name when you think about it. Ed, we are here to talk about a 1990 FZR 1000 and how this motorcycle was much like. We're gonna spend a lot of time today talking about the Aprilia Cube and how much it hated Colin Edwards.
So Hawaii,
that bike hated you.
Hawaii Raceway Park.
Right.
Back in the day. Alex Lee was racing his YZF 750 with a FZR 1000 engine.
Cool.
So the Yamaha Monster combination.
All right.
And if I recall correctly, it made 160 horsepower on the Dynojet dyno on Oahu.
Woo-hoo!
Back then.
Wow.
That's a little something something.
And everybody knows dynos on Hawaii read low.
Because?
Closer to the equator.
Closer to the equator. Excellent. I thought you were going to say something about the salt-water interaction.
The poor science teacher who's listening to us, his head just exploded.
There's no smart people listening to this show. If they were smart, they wouldn't
listen. There's no smart people making this show.
So I don't remember how this fits into the timeline of my TZ250s.
Is this episode 17?
17,
Did we say that?
Yes,
okay, cool.
Did.
Go on. Timeline.
But I had a customer, Sport Bike Hawaii customer named Jerry, and he had an FZR 1000.
Right.
And he loaned it to me to race against Alex Lee bike.
So the point of this story is never loan anybody your leader bike to race.
It worked out poorly in the end. But he got race body work. So the bike was basically stock.
Got it.
And so I'm chasing Alex around. We're coming into the off camber for the last lap.
Right.
And so off camber, then the sweeper, and then the finish line. Brock Fee is up ahead on his RG500 Gamma. And
cool.
So let me point out to those people who'll be like, oh, they didn't have any good racing in Hawaii. Bullshit, mofo. Right? YZF Yamaha Monster, FZR 1000, brand new. This is 1990.
Right.
And a 500 Gamma.
Right.
Now we're lapping the Gamma, but hey.
Doesn't matter.
So as we come up on him, I'm like, ah, oh, this is done, right? I'm probably not going to get Alex. I've had 10 tries, right? Two more corners. I'm probably not going to get him. I'm not really any closer. And it looks to me at first blush that Alex is going to get by Brock on the way in. I'm going to be behind him through the corner. And
Brock is the guy on the Gamma.
On the Gamma.
Okay.
So Alex goes underneath Brock on the brakes in the Gamma, and Brock just stays out. He knows that somebody's behind Alex,
right,
and he leaves the door open for me. And so then I switch from, oh, it was over, to maybe I can get the drive on a sweeper. And Brock had a camera on his bike. Stepped that thing out totally, completely 90 degrees sideways, smoke billowing off the tire. The thing flicks me in the air so violently that when my head snaps down, C6 vertebrae hits the top of C7 vertebrae and cracks C7 all the way through at an angle from top corner to the back corner.
Can I fractures say that it. I really like the podcasts that involve your high sides?
Yeah.
Okay. I believe that there's a finite number of high sides out
when
there.
When you've crashed 36 times like I yes. get enough practice, I don't mess around.
Thank you.
I Boom. Crash.
It's serious. Thank you for taking one for the team. Okay, go ahead.
The broken bike, vertebrae. The bike starts doing the super violent, fast, in the air, long, short way cartwheeling.
Awesome.
While it flies through the air. So it's not damaged yet. And disappears out of the picture stage right.
Got it.
I disappeared out of the picture up. Right? Like, so now all you can see is Alex. Ed and the biker are gone from the picture.
And Ed has departed stage up.
Up. So I come back through the screen. Phew, onto the ground. Smack, tumble, roll ahead. And I disappear now below the screen. Because Brock runs over me.
Right?
So you see me fall back into the picture. And then when Brock runs over me, you see sky and then the world again because he ran over me. Now, fortunately, he runs over my
ankle.
Shit, I forget if it was the left ankle and breaks my ankle, but doesn't run over my head like he thought he did.
Got it.
So, red flag. I'm laying on the ground on my side and kind of in pain.
A little bit, right?
And I'm like pretty disoriented too. That was a big whack. So I crashed off the bike at the off camber exit.
Okay.
And I landed pretty much halfway from the off camber to the sweeper. And then I slid to a quarter of the way to this entrance of the sweeper.
Okay.
So the total distance from off the bike to come to a stop is in the area of 50 yards.
Okay.
It was a good one.
Right.
And that's from a 40 mile an hour corner.
Wow. That's a big one.
So I'm laying on my side, so the world is at a funny angle.
Right.
And the first thing I remember after all this is Brock Fee looking, you know, upside down at me, still in his helmet. His head is fully red. His face is red. He's crying like just waterworks. He thought I was dead. He thought I ran over my head. He's freaked out.
Right.
He zoomed back to the pits, comes running back over. I'm laying in the fetal position, right? I'm like, Brock, I'm okay. It's fine. Don't worry,
poor guy.
Right. But how bad is it when the guy who's injured is trying to calm down the dude that thinks he killed him, right? So, and by the way, the bike, like, you know, flipped 82 times in the chain link fence. That's just messed up. So, fast forward to...
you used none of the decades of mechanical experience you have in describing that bike.
I don't remember everything that was damaged.
It was messed up.
Actually, it wasn't all that bad. Nothing major was broken. It didn't bend the frame. It didn't do the forks.
Didn't that thing have a steel frame?
No, it was aluminum. Alex Lee crashed his in the YZF thing in turn two one time, and the coils went another 100 yards. It ripped the coils out of the bike. We had to have like six guys pick the bike up and lay it on its side like on a stretcher into the back of a pickup truck.
Right.
That thing was destroyed. That was horrible.
Okay.
That was a warm-up lap crash.
I hate those.
So anyway, fast forward to... a few weeks ago, I'm at Eastern Creek. I'm riding the YZF R1
right.
and the YZF R1M with the full electronic stuff.
Right.
My first time on a bike with full electronics. And so my opinion is you're a sissy if you need this kind of stuff.
Right.
And after riding the bike, I'm like, you know, this stuff's not messing with me. And it's kind of nice to know it's there. And then I got to thinking the other day, I would not have broken my neck. I would not have killed Jerry's bike. If I had had this, I wouldn't have won the race either. That wouldn't have made that happen.
Wouldn't have made any difference.
But there was no value that came out of me getting hurt and the bike getting beat up because I didn't have that stuff. And I made that mistake. Instead of slow, look, lean, and roll, I went slow, look, lean, and whack. Bad thing to do.
Right.
Right? So I'm really happy to be in another new era of motorcycling, right? When I started racing, we just got from... the really old 70s bikes to the GPZ 550 and then to the Hurricane and the Ninja, a massive increase in technology and ability.
Right.
And we had bikes that could do the same lap after lap right. after lap. We had tires that lasted a long time and were consistent, right? We had brakes that didn't fade, you know? That was a huge improvement. And so I was racing in the 80s, 90s, and things were fantastic. And now electronics are going to make it another step better. Think about when we have data systems like what the R1M has added as an accessory to your R3
street bike
300.
That's going to be great.
You don't need the electronic traction control on a 300.
Right.
But to have that system and be able to see your mistakes.
That was one of the things I wanted to ask you about. When you were riding for the website motorcycledaily.com down there in Australia, they downloaded the data for you, so you could see what you were doing. How useful would that be to a club racer
or a track day guy? Huge, right?
Right.
Think about the simple example that I love. You sit up in brakes next to the 3 marker.
Right.
Right. And you tell your friends you're braking at the 3 marker, and they go, "Well, I saw you sit up and brake at the 5." And it turned. Everybody has to learn this, right?
Right.
You were looking at the 3 when you started braking, but you were next to the 5. You have to learn to recognize that, right? Well, with the data system, you can figure that stuff out yourself.
Exactly.
You can. You watch the little dot going around on the GPS picture of the track. It's not showing you where on the track surface you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's showing that you're on the straightaway leading to. And when the little line lines up with where you start braking, you look at the dot and go, "Oh, look, that's next to the 3 marker or whatever," right? That's just one example.
One of the things I learned from looking at
You can go, I was in second gear. Damn
right?
I thought I was in third.
One of the things I learned from my data traces was how much my mid-corner speed would vary.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have a lap timer, you're not paying attention to that stuff.
You're on a track without a lap timer, they're just wasting your time.
Well, or you're having fun. Okay?
Still, it's more fun if you know what you're really doing. But here's the thing about this data system.
Okay.
So it's super easy to use.
Right.
So my experience with data system, the best example I got for you is John France. So I show up in the AMA 250 class and I'm racing, and there's this guy named John France.
Okay.
And he's been doing it for a lot longer than I am. He's got a faster bike. And so it took me half a season to start beating him.
Okay.
And then in later years, the guy's a competitor. I never lapped him,
right?
You see him in practice and you work to catch him, and then you slowly get by him, and sometimes he passes you back.
Okay.
I beat him more than he beat me, but he's definitely a factor, right? So he gets data one year. I see him at Daytona. He's got the potentiometers and on the front and the back. I know he's got the stuff. I'm like, oh boy, he's going to be even tougher, right?
Right.
Never saw him again. Every time I walk by him in the pits, he's at his laptop trying to interpret all this data instead of doing this
changing
maintenance
tires
that he knew how to do and whatever. And it was become a guy that I just blow right by. And so data was clearly difficult. There's too much information. I don't know.
Right.
It's hard to use. Okay. A lot of work. Now, a bike comes with it. Dude, they downloaded this stuff onto a tablet.
Right.
First time I've ever used a tablet. So I had to figure out how to turn
did
the thing
get
on.
Did you keep the tablet?
I did. Thank you, Yamaha.
That's awesome. Of course, they probably paid $10 for it.
Good for them.
Yeah.
And I look at the thing and I figure out I can slide my fingers apart and make the screen spacing bigger so you can see the line. Like, oh, the red line is what gear I'm in, and the purple line is, you know, it was intuitive. It was in the less than a few minutes. I'm like, look at that. It takes me on average 0.2 seconds per downshift. Who knew? It's that simple, dude. It's awesome. And here's this out. There's two things here. It's either going to destroy bragging, right? Because you got, or somebody's going to make an app and you can change the data to what you want. No, dude, I was going 300 miles an hour. Look, it says so right here.
Niki Lauda complained about televised Formula One races because he said you couldn't lie about what happened when you came back to the pits anymore.
Yeah.
I
had a rider tell me that he didn't back off for turn 9 at Big Willow from turn 8. And I'm thinking bullshit, but now there would be proof.
Yeah, now there'd be proof, right? Unless they were on Ninja or Honda CB.
Well, the way riders do that is their definition of back off changes to the same definition that tuners use when they say, this bike is stock.
Stockish. The stock like.
Lying bastards.
The lying. You know what? Lying is such an ugly word.
It is. When we went on the street ride in Australia.
Uh-huh.
But by the way, they tell you I went to Australia to ride bikes.
Ah!
So they took us on a street ride.
Oh, wait, before you get there. You can also tune the Yamaha suspension and engine braking and all that stuff.
Well, the M, you can change. You change the clickers with the dash right. instead of with the screwdriver.
Or you could, you can actually do it remotely as well.
You can load the changes into your device
right.
and download it into the bike, and then it sets to there.
One of the guys who was there.
You push this button or you push that button.
One of these guys who was at the test said, "That's right. This is the point we've reached. We've reached the point where we can sit in the lounge with a tablet and make changes to the motorcycle that's sitting
Yeah,
in the
I can still do it faster with a screwdriver.
I'm
though,
sure you so. Could, but.
So anyway, back to lying.
Right.
So we're on this street ride. We stop at this gas station. It's pouring down rain. And we're riding, we're not riding R1s. We're riding other Yamaha street bikes, which is nice, but it's got nothing to do with the story that I'm there to write. So it's pouring down rain, so I mentioned to the leader, I go, listen, if other people want to abort, I'm happy to head back and go to the hotel and relax and work on the story, whatever. And the leader guy goes, oh, no, we're going over that way where it's clear, it's going to be fine, it's another 30K to where we're having lunch, it's good. It wasn't even close to 30K. Now, the weather got better, it was fine, it was a great ride or whatever, but it was more like 60K. Okay. So we get there and we stop, and I tell the guy, you know what I like about you Australians? You guys just lie straight to your face. No bullshit about it. I'm like, I got to respect the man who can lie like that.
Hey,
he thought that was pretty funny. Good on you, mate.
Studies show that we are lied to on a daily basis between 10 and 200 times. We get better at lying as we get older, but we get less good at detecting other people's lies.
Well, it's a group agreement, right?
Exactly.
Well, to a certain extent, if we're going to get along, it's a little easier.
You know what? If we don't call bullshit on everything. Little lie that comes out, you know?
Speaking of Australian street rides.
Speaking of lying.
So the place we got to where we stopped had motorcycle-only parking.
Cool.
With little signs.
Right.
And it had a bulletin board up, like the kind that the government will put up and have
right.
posts about, you know, fire risk and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a bunch of great, truthful, useful tips about riding. It had a picture of a windy road, and down here in the first corner it said something got in here a little too fast. The next corner goes, runs a little bit wide. The next corner goes a little bit more wide. And then in the end, there's a tree, and I like, ran into this tree, you know, stuff like that. It was actually like, yeah, that explains it really well, right? You got to accelerate through the thing. If you get in slow, it's fine, right?
Right.
Don't get in too fast. And it was the kind of road, the road was a challenging road. It was, you know, you needed to be paying attention. So I was impressed. It was really nice. Australia was very motorcycle friendly.
Some people say that one of the appeals of motorcycle road racing is the danger. The fact that you can get hurt doing it.
You know, I hear that all the time, and there's all the people that say that there's the adrenaline rush and whatever. But for me, anyway, I don't think it's that way. I mean, I know the adrenaline rush, you get all excited and whatever, but I don't do it because I like that my hands shake.
Yeah.
I do it because it's really hard to do.
Right.
It's challenging to do it well. And when you do it right, you know it.
You've got
like
to
I've had people
yeah.
ask me, how do I know when I'm doing it good? I'm going to listen. When you kiss your girlfriend and you do it right, it feels good, right? You know, right? Okay, that's exactly the same thing
feeling.
When you're riding.
Exactly.
If it feels comfortable and good and whatever, it was correct.
Then you win.
You know, you may not have the same posture as Marquez. But it's fine. You don't need to have that posture.
By the way,
I have a picture of me on my TZ.
Right.
Way back in 94, 93.
With your head on the curb?
No.
Oh.
And so remember, those tires were a lot older than the current tires.
Right, right.
And in this picture, clearly, easily, if I had hung off a little more, I could have had my elbow on the ground. No problem.
Yeah.
My head is level with the cone.
Could have, would have, should have.
Just pointing that out
just
to people.
Out
don't
to
want
you.
To drag my shoulder, elbow, here, not going to start.
Here's what I was thinking.
Did we make our point that we were trying to make in this show? Because we're getting close to the 2 minute
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, the electronics.
Yeah, the electronics
are good.
Are good.
You know what the great thing about your tale about the FCR is? Doing what you did in that corner, the electronics wouldn't have made you any faster. You still would have lost the race.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Right. You like you said in the last two shows ago or whenever that was. They don't make you faster.
They slow
the bike down. Now,
and
my total time to finish the race would have been significantly faster had I not high-sighted.
Oh.
As a matter of fact,
the clock
on that still running.
Still ticking. Ed's building an FCR 1000 to go back.
Go back in time. I'd have to build the track back, too. They bulldozed the track.
If you told me you could still race, okay, but you can no longer crash, what will happen is if you ride poorly, the bike will slow down and you will lose, but you're not going to crash. You're
not
going to hurt
yourself. You know, that's what small bikes do.
What do you mean?
When you get into a corner too hot and you don't get a good drive, the bike slows down on the straightaway and you're like, oh, you know what? I must have done something wrong back there.
But
right?
You can still crash a small bike.
You
right?
can.
What I'm talking about, hypothetically, if you just eliminated the risk of physical injury and death from this sport, I wouldn't enjoy it any less.
No, neither would I. I would. I'd
know,
be. Yeah. The idea that you like the risk. You know, the risk makes it serious, helps you be focused. Right?
Right.
It doesn't mean you like that risk. Right.
Yes. Especially
but you know, there is something to the risk part, because otherwise people wouldn't get addicted to fighting wars.
Well,
there is a high that comes because it's so serious.
But again, it doesn't
mean you like the fact that you might get your head blown off.
It just makes it serious. It makes it serious.
The thing that people are looking for, right? In the workaday world.
Yeah,
people don't care if you put the comma in the wrong. It's fun on the internet to make a big thing about use the wrong form of there.
Right.
But we all know what you mean, and we've all done that.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. But you go to the racetrack, you're on a patrol with your buddies in a war zone with all this. You're in the space shuttle. You're on the space station. It matters if you close the door properly.
Right? Yes.
And so everything becomes clearer. You have to pay more attention.
It's a mental space that most human beings
and it's satisfying to be there.
They're never there. They're never there.
Well, you know, most people in the world, first world, lots of people in the third world are in that place trying to stay alive all the time.
Somebody's trying to chop off all our heads. Yeah. Granted, I used this example the other day. I said, you know, the whole gym, 24-hour fitness, whatever it is, modern invention.
Yep.
300 years ago, you know, you were working
your
ass.
What are you doing today? Oh, I'm walking across the savannah looking for food.
Yeah, exactly.
Your legs are nicely toned,
exactly.
aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah, you're working your ass off just to stay alive.
They don't go to the hospital and get told, you know what? You're a fat
exactly.
ratio.
You're, really,
you're in borderline of obese.
Exactly. There was
like,
yeah,
what?
Right?
I got food. Eat it.
Exactly. We need all right now.
Yeah.
The same. You know what we're doing now? And
we're
making
a podcast.
No. Well, this is actually part of it. We now do things intellectually that are the equivalent of going to the gym. And it's because we live in a world. Think about this, dude. You can run a cash register, and it's been this way for a while. You can run a cash register and never touch money nor know how much something costs.
How cool would it be if reincarnation was real and we could remember our previous lives?
Oh. Why are you getting into that? That's a whole different podcast.
It would be a different podcast. Yes. Hey. Like, we could remember when we were racing on, like, Norton featherbeds.
Right?
Right? Way back in the...
And we'd have 800 people on Ninja 250s thrilled to death about being there. Go.
It seems apparent that there is proof that there were humans living during the previous Ice Age.
Okay, but...
Recent discovery.
But were they racing motorcycles?
Not yet.
Then they were not civilized.
They might have been tobogganing.
Exactly.
The Jamaican guys were doing the blob sled thing because there was snow down there then. And that's the DNA that led them to try to go to the Atlantic.
Genetic memory.
2-minute thing.
Oh, Nikki Hayden, if you're listening, Nikki, yo, what's up? Hang in there. You're going to see an improvement in the bike halfway through this season. MotoGP is going to a different set of software next year. Okay, they've already got all the spec hardware. The software is going to be different. And it's going to be basically a huge suite that will do everything that everybody wants it to do. And the trick is to make that work for you. Midway through this season, I think it's sometime in June or July, all the factories have agreed to quit working on this year's factory electronics.
Okay.
Okay.
And go to the...
Yep, they just said, okay, the end of development is right here.
And what makes you say that's going to be good for Nikki and not
because
a disaster?
Because the open bikes now have next year's software on them.
Okay.
Nobody's paying attention to that stuff right now because Yamaha and Honda, because they're all trying to freaking win this year, right? But in mid-June, they're going to need people. The factory software is still going to be better because it's been dialed in. So Marquez, Pedrosa, Rossi, Lorenzo, they're all going to keep using the really, really, really good, well-sorted stuff.
Right.
But those knuckleheads back at the factory are going to switch their attention to the bikes that Nikki's riding. And that's good. They're going to need to test it on the track.
How long is it going to take these guys who are used to the exorbitant amount of feel that Bridgestone tires give you? How long is it going to take them to get used to the Michelin feel, which is apparently more grip until, whoa,
yeah,
where'd it go?
Right, where'd it go? Why, exactly? Why is this Hawaiian man crying? I don't know. I, you know what? I don't think it's going to be that big a deal.
Your name is still Michael Gugis.
And you are still Ed Sorbo. Aloha.
Live long and prosper.